Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for coming, whether it's live or listening to the recording. My name is Asael.
I'm Galit.
And together we run Own Your Shit. And we're trying to help change the world one couple at a time.
Yep. Even through dark times.
Even through dark times. And we're very happy here to open this talk with Daniel Owino, which I'll introduce in a second. But we just wanted to say what we realized as the war broke out, that our way to contribute to the society is to really help couples survive and thrive in these difficult times, giving them practical skills. And we did this in Hebrew, and then we realized we want to also do this in English, and we reached out to people we really appreciate and love. And it is my great honor, I'm very excited, by the way, to introduce Dr. Daniel Owino. I want to read a little bit about his bio, and then I want to tell a personal story. So Daniel Owino, couple family therapist, drama therapist, group psychotherapist. He's the founder of Rehearsals for Growth, which we'll introduce, and he's authored two books. One of them is right here, called Rehearsals for Growth, Practical Theater Improvisation for Psychotherapists. And I have to share a story. When I was doing my doctorate, I started doing my doctorate on improvisation and therapy. I found this book and I basically decided, what's the point? I'm just going to stop because somebody already did the work. And I fell into despair and depression. I was like, there's no point. And I actually emailed him out of the blue in 2013. That was almost a decade ago. And I said to you, Daniel, you probably don't remember this email. I said, thank you so much for your book. And you were very generous and you sent me a DVD of your techniques. And you have been kind of an inspiration and a mentor and a very, very wise person. I highly recommend this book. And I just want to just thank you, first of all, for all those years really kind of mentoring me in that sense and being an inspiration and trailblazing to bringing improvisation to psychotherapy. So first, it's my opportunity to say thank you. And I know you're retired and you still teach. And I just wanted to say that I think you're one of the first people that ever spoke about play and improvisation as mental health, as emotional health, as good practice. And I would just be really curious if you want to just start talking a little bit about that and we'll take it from there.
Of course. Yes, thank you for that very generous introduction. I would like to welcome all of you who are attending, and those of you who will see it in recording at a later time, welcome to you as well. Rehearsals for Growth is an application of improvisational theater to psychotherapy, specifically to couples therapy. That's the main application that I've developed it, even though it has been applied in many other venues as well. The central concept that I make use of as a way of introducing people to Rehearsals for Growth is the distinction between what I call survival mind and adventure mind. And survival mind is what we do most of the time as adults. We have a purpose to what we're doing. We think ahead. We stay out of trouble. We try to find the optimal solution to our present situation, all of which is fine. There's nothing wrong with or faulty or pathological about it, but it's limited in a way because it omits or leaves out or eclipses adventure mind. And adventure mind is what happens when we're just involved in the moment without any other purpose or any other designs, just trying to fully experience what's going on in the present moment. And you see this most exemplified by young children. You know, if you look at a three-year-old is not really concerned with how good they look or with whether or not it's going to get them something later on in life. It's really what's of interest to me right now. And if it's of interest, they're absorbed in it. They're fully into it. When it ceases to be interesting, they just drop it and move on to something else. You know, it's very hard for adults to get back into it, into that kind of state of mind. The best we can really do is to play some games, which I'll be introducing you to later on, but also to align yourself with children. If you have children of your own, that's ideal. But of course, if you are around children or can be arranged to be around children and take their lead, they'll show you a little bit of what getting back into the spirit of adventure mind is all about.
I wanted to ask.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
So, you know, it's been 3 months now in wartime, and I feel like we're all in survival mode, survival mind, right? And it's really hard to be an adventure mind right now, you know?
Yes.
And I'm thinking as the couples are listening here, it's can you talk a little bit about that? You know, how can we go into adventure mind when we are in survival mode, when we are in crisis, trauma, fear?
Survival mind, even in good times, survival mind dominates because it's simply the habits that we've accumulated. But under stress and with traumatic conditions which are pressing in on us, it's even harder. But play is not only an alternative, it's also to some extent an antidote to the oppressive effect of being so taken over by survival mind thinking all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no denying that there's a lot of heartache and a lot of tragedy and a lot of stress that we can't escape and that we have to deal with in as best a way we can. I'm not saying that we should escape into some kind of fantasy adventure and try to tune out or ignore what else is going on. But we should find some place in inside ourselves to make accessible the possibility of opening to play.
Yeah.
And playfulness is really a state in which you set aside the importance of whatever else survival mind is screaming for attention. It's saying, in effect, that can wait. But right now, I'm just going to focus on what is enjoyable, what is interesting, what is inspiring or exciting in the moment that I can take away from it. And the long-term effect of that, even though you only stay in that state for a short time, is that it balances out. It offsets the tendency to become completely dominated and taken over by all the gloom, the terror, the worry that goes along with the survival mind under stressful conditions.
I have to share that I love that you call it survival mind versus adventure mind, because even just saying adventure, right?
Yeah.
It opens it up. It's like it transcends reality, right? It's like, well, what's over there? Well, what else can be? It's so inviting and expansive. And I feel that the past few months since the war, it feels like, you know, like everything is collapsing, including myself, like I'm collapsing into myself. And just hearing that adventure mind is an invitation to expand.
It is.
So.
Yeah. And the playfulness depends upon entering into, sometimes it's called the play space, there are other names for it, but the play space is really an agreement that what we're going to do now doesn't count or isn't to be taken literally the way that we normally take things to be. So when you joke around with friends, for example, you're kidding around with them. They know you're kidding. You know that they're kidding. And we're all just playfully, you know, interacting in a way that signals that it's safe, that we are connecting, and that we can enjoy ourselves, you know. And that's in contrast to what happens when you're dealing with strangers or you're dealing with problems that are of a less personal nature that are, you know, just dominated almost completely by survival mind. Even in adventure mind, there's a little bit survival mind in the background watching.
Right. And you said,
so it's not like you forget that.
You said something really interesting to me. You said even little doses of adventure mind.
Yeah, like pockets of play.
Pockets of play.
I like that. That's good. I like that.
Keeps the doctor away. You say just little, even micro dosing of play is enough to keep us mentally healthy or like emotionally open or.
Right. There was a family therapist back in the 1970s, I think, Paul Watzlawick, who wrote a book called The Situation is Hopeless but Not Serious.
Wow.
Love it.
That has a little bit of the flavor of what I'm talking about, because when you're in the play space, what matters for now can set aside the usual considerations. So let me give you an example of that, right?
Please.
So, example, you give yourself permission to feel safe enough with whoever is around you. If you feel safe enough to just let yourself go into the moment and be present with the other person and forget about all the usual things that apply to what it's going to happen or how this is going to come out or what they'll think of me, you know, all those sorts of things. You simply set those aside and just find out what will happen by having an adventure in the moment you get there. So let me give you an example of that. I'm going to invite Galit and Asel. I'm going to invite you to be my demonstration couple to doing this. Okay. And I'm going to have you tell a story one word at a time. Okay. And what this will do is each of you will contribute a word. Since we're doing this in English, I don't know the syntax of Hebrew well enough to know what the differences are. But in English, one person says a word. The only requirement that the other person follows is that there has to be in their own thoughts some grammatical coherence to it. In other words,
it's
not random word association. This is forming sentences, okay? And then it goes back and forth alternating between the two of you, okay? So try not to spend too much time pondering or waiting. But if you get jammed up and it appears to you as though, you know what, the word that the other person had, it just doesn't make sense. You just say blank or whatever, and then we just start over. We don't try to justify it or argue about it. It's just, you know, we're just trying to see if we can get into the flow.
Look at that.
I know. Yes, I can see Galit is very warmed up to playing, and that's beautiful. So, Galit, let me ask you to just say the first word, and Asael, you come in with the next word, and then you alternate. And when you get to the end of a sentence, one of you, either of you, can end the sentence by saying the word period, which doesn't count as a word. So the next sentence starts after the word period has been said. All right? So, yeah, Galit, any word.
But it has, like, any word that would begin the sentence.
Well, any word will begin a sentence if you utter it.
Pineapple
was
delicious
when
I
ate
it
yesterday.
And also,
okay, one word.
And
then
also,
I
ate
a
coconut.
Period.
Good. Okay, let's stop there. Okay, so. Okay, the literary value of this production is not really relevant here. We're not being in survival mind and being critics about it. The question really comes down to what happened, what was the experience like, what was the flow like of being involved in playing this little one word at a time game. Okay, so what was happening for you, Asael?
It was interesting. It was like waiting, and then I had these little moments of judgment of like, where is she going? Where is she going?
Right.
Take you somewhere because I knew where I wanted to go. And I was like, Mom, we had pineapple on the beach in Costa Rica. It was like making up this whole tropical vacation that we had. And you were just like, what? And
yeah, sometimes people get unhappy because they don't get to say the interesting words. They have all the filler words going around it. But another thing, let me ask you your experience of that. Anything else you wanted to add, Galit, to what you just said?
Well, I had like already built this whole story, you know, of like, I was on the beach, I was drinking my pineapple, and then I was going to have my coconut, and it was sun, and it was fun, and, you know, it was like this whole adventure and holiday, and we were in a different place, and the sun was shining, and I was like trying to see if I could get a Asael to come along so that I could build this story.
Right. Did you feel that you were getting cooperation from Asael?
I think I had to remind myself that he's not in my head. So he doesn't know that I've made this extravagant story that he could come along with.
Right. So one thing about it is that neither person can completely control the story. You may have in your head, you know, a pina colada story combining coconut and pineapple and whatever, and you may be in the tropics and all the rest of it. Your partner may or may not be able to pick up on that, and they may have their own way of going or their own associations, whatever they find interesting. So the real trick here is to be able to let go of what you're controlling and to simply allow it to be a co-production, something that the two of you are both co-constructing, and it's not going to be anything that either of you completely can predict or control, because you don't have more than one word out of every other word to contribute to it.
It's really,
I love that.
It's really letting go and surrendering.
Yeah, it's a kind of surrender, but it's safe.
But it's safe. I was even more than that. It's really recognizing it as a co-creation, because the way you just described it really helps me recognize that, like, I was trying to pull it in my direction rather than recognize that it's not my story that Asael is kind of coming along with, but rather we have to create this together.
Right.
And this, I think that's, I love this exercise, and I think we have to practice.
That's why it's called Practical Skills for Cumble.
Yeah. So, and the other thing too, is that if you get hung up on rules, you know, I could have introduced this game and made it into sound something like you have certain requirements to meet. You know, you have to do this and you have to not do that. You know, if I present it in that frame, that's going to create a mindset which is much more survival-oriented, survival-mind-oriented, because what happens then is that part of your mind is distracted to thinking of, am I following the rules? Am I doing it right? Is my part, did my partner make a mistake? Should I call out on it or whatever? You know, and that is not where we want to go. We want the two of you to feel joined, to feel interested, to feel alive in the moment, and to set aside all the considerations about whether it's good, whether it followed rules, and all the rest of it. So the rules are really not the point. There has to be some structure, because otherwise there isn't any place to dig in and get going. But you don't have to be, shall we say, a stickler for accuracy or for...
I'm realizing, Daniel, how important the framing is, because for couples in wartime, we need to pause life and say, we are entering a place, like it's an active pause and choice to go and to really give that permission and say, right now we're playing, right now we're letting go. And it's, I'm realizing for me, but you know, it's like, it really requires to change, you know, to really step out of where I am right now.
It does.
It requires so much. I can't tell you how much I love this game.
Good.
I feel like the game is, every couple has to do this now, like now.
I'm gonna do it again.
I want to do it every night now for the rest of my life.
Okay, well then that's something that you'll be having to look forward to. By the way, I sometimes call this home play, as opposed to what I do in therapy, where I pretty much direct people to do games and exercises, usually with some purpose related to the direction of the therapy. People can do this purely for their own enjoyment by themselves once they understand the structure of it and give themselves permission to make the time to be attentive to one another and trying it. Sure. I have many other games that we can play, and I'd like to introduce you to a different one right now. For this one, possibly the two of you could stand up and could move a little bit away from the camera. You should still be able to hear me, but it would be good if you could be at a distance where your heads wouldn't be cut off by the camera. I say, oh, you're taller, so you can change the angle of the camera. Great. Okay, this is good. Okay, so you're standing, separate maybe about maybe a meter or so more apart. That's fine. That's good. Okay. All right. So in this game, we're going to do a mirrors exercise, okay? And in mirroring, we'll do this without talking, because this allows you to deepen your concentration and focus. You'll be looking in each other's eyes while you're doing it, okay? And we'll do, just because of this limitations of space, including the space, the visual space of the Zoom frame, we'll be doing this where the movement will be confined to the waist up, okay? So we won't be walking around, although when you can do this on your own, you don't have to, without a camera being limiting, you can do it with full body movement as well. Okay, so one of you will be designated. I'll ask one of you to be the leader, and the other one is the follower. And the leader should move slowly and continuously, and the follower simply mirrors and imitates the action of the leader. Okay, there's the follower follows the leader. And after a little while, I'm going to call the word switch. When I say switch, the leadership changes so that the other person becomes the leader and the first person who was the leader now is the follower. Okay? So in that way, you'll get to go back and forth. And then at the end, I will say the word mutual, and we won't have a leader or a follower, but you'll continue to move and try to move together. Okay? All right? So you'll be focused on each other. You won't be looking at me. You'll be looking just at each other. And we'll be doing this in silence, because that helps you to deepen your attention or concentration on each other. All right. So let's begin. Okay. Let's have Galit, you'll be the leader. Okay. All right. And try to keep your partner with you rather than move rapidly and discontinuously. Try to keep your partner with you. And switch. switch again. Okay, one more switch. And now mutual, meaning no leader and no follower, but you're continuing to move together. Okay, and stop. Great.
Wow.
Well done. Okay, please come back to...
That was so much fun.
Okay.
Adam's viewing. You're welcome to ask questions. So we'd love to hear what you're thinking as you're seeing this as well.
Mm-hmm. So let me just ask again. Was there anything different about the being a leader than being a follower for you? Okay, either of you can answer first.
So I think for me, it was fun to be a leader to a point, and then I was ready for a fan to kind of take over. So the switching was fun for me. And also I realized that it was easier for me to kind of create mutually in movement than it was with words, with the story.
Yes.
Like there was something with creating together in movement that was much more, that was like much easier to flow with than with kind of how rapidly I had created a story and wanted to go in that direction.
Right. Okay. And for you, what was your preference?
I just really enjoyed following. And I feel this is connecting to, I feel like my exhaustion from being in this work for so long. I just want to lead to lead. I want someone just to take me.
All right.
And I just felt like it was just so nice to just completely like lean on her and see where she's going. And suddenly when I had to lead, felt responsibility. Sure, I mean, it just came like I'm just my being tired, you know, and it's like,
yeah. So people sometimes bring to this exercise a preference, which may be kind of characterological in the sense that they always or pretty much always tend to prefer to be leaders or followers, or it may be situational in the sense that now you're feeling out for one or the other role.
Right.
But the structure of leading and following, that there's an agreement as to who's going to lead and who follows, in a way removes the responsibility of having to know who's going to take the initiative and whether the other person's hanging back or is waiting to jump in or whatever else. So it gives you a different way of focusing. Also, just by not talking and just by looking into each other's eyes while you're moving, and you can follow well enough because at the distance that you are, you can see out of your peripheral vision what the other person's movements are, shifts your consciousness a little bit. I won't claim that there's any deep trance being created by it, but there is a sense of connection that is a little bit other than ordinary. And by the way, we want experiences to be unusual to some extent because the usual thing tends to become too... overridden by the usual ways that we think and associate. One thing that couples very quickly get into is being routine with one another. They develop routines, which is necessary and is fine in many ways, but it has a limitation because those becomes, in a way, overly familiar ways of not really being fully present in the moment. You know, it allows you to be kind of mentally a little bit lazy, sort of like watching television passively does. You know, it becomes something which doesn't really demand that you take some initiative or do anything in the moment.
So I'm thinking also these exercises, you're basically feeding us your, I guess, the recipe for good relationships through the games.
Yeah.
Interdependence, surrender, letting go.
Creating something together, like synergy, attunement.
And then one thing
you didn't mention is validation. That what happens is that you are accepting the reality of the other person. Just like in the one word story, you're saying that the story is valid when the other person contributes a word that was not one that you expected. You know, you're validating the other person. You're attending to them, but you're also validating them.
And it's interesting because I'm thinking of, like, I know that I have 40% less bandwidth in the war, right? So couples right now have less energy to start analyzing. And but I think doing these games, it's visceral, it's simple, and it,
yeah, it's like a lifeline, like a breath of fresh air. It's being able, it's connecting on a different plane.
That's right.
That's what it feels like.
Give me a time check on how much more time we have to play games right now before we open it up.
Let's do it.
We do two more.
I think
we get two more. I want
adventure. I'm gonna say to you, like, I'm telling you, like, I think the word adventure mind, like,
some... yeah, the adventure mind just opened a whole.
Wow,
I love it.
I think only now, Daniel, I'm watching Elite Live, working with
you. I've not seen it forever,
and I'm noticing how much it's really oxygen.
Yeah, I think I've been play deprived.
You've been play deprived.
I've been play deprived.
Good. Okay. Well, let's jump right into another game. This time, I'm going to again ask you to stand up and if you can be a little further away from each other than you were before, which means farther away from the camera. Maybe you have to move the furniture or the camera a little bit to do that. Right. So yeah. All right. So in this game, this is called a tug of war, and a tug of war, which is somewhat familiar to people to do this, is usually framed as being a contest between opponents. Okay. Except instead of a real rope, you're going to be playing with an imaginary rope. So the rope has to exist in your mind, not as something physical that you're contending with, okay? So what I'm going to ask you to do is I'm going to ask you to, when I give the instructions to start, to pick up the rope, which is lying on the ground, running between the two of you, to get a good grip and to focus on your opponent, and I'll call that person an opponent for the purpose of the game, which is this kind of contest, and there's going to be a struggle, and there's going to be a winner and a loser at the end of about 20 seconds. Okay. All right. So make up your mind that you're going to really make it feel, you're going to invest in it to make it real for yourself. Okay. All right. So now pick up the rope, reach down and pick up the rope. Okay. Get a good grip. Okay. On the count of three, you're going to start pulling. Ready? One, two, three, pull. Okay. All right. I think you can't, it's an interesting thing in this game. You can't win in the sense of unilaterally decide for sure you're going to win. On the other hand, you can decide to lose and delete that. That's what I saw you doing, is like, you were here, you take it. Okay. So let me ask you just about that. Okay. How real did the rope feel to you?
Wow.
Well, that's how real the rope feel to me. The rope didn't feel real to me.
Not very real. Okay.
I think for me, it, the framing of putting it in game, not in play, like opponents, triggered my like competition mode. But then I was like, I had to remind myself, this is play. This is like, I'm enjoying the tension. I'm enjoying, I don't want to win. Like when she was going too fast, I was like, wait, I'm not ready to win yet. I just feel this, the.
And I felt like I was like playing as if it were real. Like if, like in my mind, I was like, okay, if we were really playing tug of war, what would happen? And then I was like acting out what would happen if we really play tug of war, which is like, you'd go like that, it would be 1 second, I'd go flying.
Yeah, so of course, sometimes people take the realistic situation and impose it on the game,
right,
and treat the rope as though, well, you know, he's bigger and stronger, so of course he's going to win. But of course, with an imaginary rope,
right,
being bigger and stronger doesn't have any ability to guarantee that he's going to be the winner, right? Yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say that using this, like, I'm reflecting, if this was a real role, I would probably go into game competition mode, right? But I was thinking, I was just really enjoying the tension. And I was thinking, in real life, when we have tension, I don't enjoy it. I want it to be decided one way or another.
You want it to end.
I want the, you know, as a turtle, I want the tension to end. Yes. I was like, suddenly this game, like, I didn't want to win. So I didn't want to, I just wanted to, like, I wanted to feel that tension, the dance there.
What?
To play, to feel connected. But like, I also like that the there's connected, but there's like an energy there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another thing is that I was watching the rope, the imaginary rope, and a real rope, of course, once it's under tension, means that it will, the distance between people's grip on the rope stays the same once it's under tension. Whereas a rope which doesn't behave like that is doing this, you know, it's varying, and it's like a rubber rope or a piece of taffy. So you can actually do this exercise again, not so much with a view toward winning as to seeing if you can be co-create the realism of a rope by there being a contest in which the rope is really what your attention is. It's not the outcome of the contest so much as the fidelity to the behavior which coordinates with your partner to make the rope real.
Wow.
That gives you someplace else to go.
Should we try it?
Let's try it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Challenge accepted.
All right, Daniel. Challenge accept. Let's do it.
All right. Here we go again. Ready? Pick up your rope. Okay, get a grip. All right. On the count of three. 1, 2, 3. Go. Okay, let's stop. Let's stop here. Very good.
That was so good.
Okay, don't get too worn out.
Wow.
Wow, that was that time. I could really feel it. Like, I could really feel like the energy and the tension, and it just really felt different.
One of the things that happens in the play space is that if you attend not to the outcome, you know, in real life, tugs of war, whether they're verbal or whether they're financial or whether they're physical, are very much of a product of survival mind thinking. You know, there's a lot of determination and strategizing and intention to beat your opponent or whatever. You know, there's all that mental energy devoted to the winning and losing side of this. And this is something in the play space that is opened by adventure mind. It really becomes possible to just see what happens if you're playing with the movement of the rope. And winning and losing goes out the window. It's no longer about that.
Yeah.
And there's an analogy, of course, to real life, that sometimes just the pleasure of what goes on in the moment, or the interest of what happens in the present moment, can transcend the tendency to focus on the outcome and the value attached to an outcome.
Yeah.
I think it's really,
I love that.
When you were saying this, I was thinking about the pleasure I was deriving from both of us focusing on one thing together.
Yeah.
It's like a win-win.
Right.
And we have to like oppose each other, but in a way that builds together.
Yeah.
And I feel like when we're in our day-to-day routine as partners, you know, as parents, you don't have a lot of those moments where the moment is just to create a moment together.
We have time for maybe one more game or exercise.
I'm going to ask you to do another one.
This one is also a verbal game. In this one, this is called Fortunately, Unfortunately. Okay? So one of you is going to be telling a story, and the partner is going to be, every sentence or two is going to be injecting the word fortunately or unfortunately to start the next sentence. Okay? So what happens is when the word changes from one fortunately to unfortunately or the other way, the attitude in the story also changes. And it's a first person narrative, a fictional first person narrative. It's about a character you're making up in your thoughts. It's not really who you are or anything realistic that's happening. Okay.
So it might tell the story and then I just interject fortunately or unfortunately, yeah?
Right. One of you is the storyteller and the other one is going to simply add the word fortunately, unfortunately. The other person will repeat it and then change the direction of the story based on what the meaning of which word it was. Okay. Who'd like to be the storyteller?
I'll be the storyteller.
Okay.
But I can do it in first person, right?
Yeah. Once upon a time.
Yes. Yes.
I woke up yesterday really excited. I planned a whole day to go meet my friend.
Unfortunately,
I missed the bus. And then it started raining.
Fortunately,
I brought my umbrella.
Oh, yeah.
And I love walking in the rain. So I walked in the rain and splashed by cars, but it was fine because I was wearing my rubber boot.
Unfortunately,
my sock kept flipping and I had to kind of stop and pick it up. My kept flipping down into my heel, but I kept walking along and, you know, enjoying the weather, the rainy kind of weather. And there was lightning and there was thunder, which made it exciting.
But unfortunately,
I also noticed that I was getting very, very wet and I don't like being wet because then I start to feel really cold.
Fortunately,
I knew that I was only 10 minutes away and we were going to sit at this lovely coffee shop and have this delicious tea and just have a wonderful time. And I kind of started to see a rainbow peek through and the rain stopped.
Unfortunately,
I dropped my phone in a puddle and couldn't call to tell her that I was going to be late.
Unfortunately,
I remembered that if I quickly put it in the bag of running, it will be okay.
Unfortunately,
I put my bag of running at home. But I got the bag of running.
Fortunately,
I knew that once I got to the cafe, they probably would have some rice and I could stick it in a bag of rice and pray that my phone would be okay. So I kind of dashed and got to the cafe.
Unfortunately,
they had rice. And then my friend joined and we had a lovely afternoon and my phone broke. But
fortunately,
I will get a new one.
Good. Okay. Let's end there. Very good. All right. Okay. So the adventure of fortunately and unfortunately is as you got wet, as the phone went in and out of functionality and so forth. anything you want to say about the flow or the process that you experienced during the game?
First of all, there were like twists and turns that even I kind of wasn't expecting. And I did get stuck a little bit, but I also recognized how did I do this? I kind of feel like when there was an unfortunately, I also then tried to make it positive.
I was thinking about it, like, usually I'm more negative. I'm more of a pessimist and Galit's more of a optimist. And I was noting when I go, unfortunately, it tips the story in my mind, at least, to like the negative, right? The empty half of the glass.
Well, I think that happens naturally, right? Obviously, like when there's unfortunately, you go kind of to the negative of the story. And fortunately, it's the positive of the story. But I wonder if I was able to kind of play a little bit more.
Right.
It was fun.
Good. That's the main
thing. It's fun to like take a walk. I feel like it's a mind walk.
Right.
Like a mind
The challenge of responding to the opposite mood of fortunately or unfortunately, it's an invitation. It doesn't compel you to go into any particular change. You know, it's an invitation to open your mind up to an alternative stance or possibility, you know? And I thought that you were at times making something positive out of the unfortunately, because that's where you wanted to go. But still, we're following the instructions, so it wasn't as though you were blocking your partner when you did that.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, you mentioned blocking, and I'm thinking, how can we? I'm going where this is meeting me right now, the story of my life right now, and finding the fortunately in a lot of unfortunate circumstances, and I think almost like a practice of saying, you know, well, fortunately, and just see what comes out of my mouth, right? Because the news is very unfortunate. Like I feel like.
There's so much unfortunate.
It's unfortunately, you know, and like so rare is it to feel like someone say to me or life is saying to me, well, fortunately.
Yeah. Oh, I like, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Notice though that this is a fictional story, so therefore there's much less investment in hanging on to one particular mood. If I started a story that said, a true story that said, I was attending my grandmother's funeral yesterday, and he said, fortunately, it would be hard for me to frame because I'm still remembering all the associations of loss and grief to the actual event. But if it's a fictional story, I have no investment in the way that the story is going, and I can steer into it. The same way, similarly to what we were doing with the one word at a time story at the beginning. Okay. So there are 160 games and exercises, and more can be added at any time. So we're obviously only sampling a little bit, and we're only doing so far things which are not shall we say games which involve taking on different roles so much as playing with just unusual instructions or circumstances. So
Alex, you know, you've been working with couples for years and decades, and to your advice for couples who need to take watching these videos, you take these games almost as like a daily routine or is a weekly practice to maintain adventure mind, to maintain connection? That would be the doctor's recommendation.
Exactly. They're to promote adventure mind as an antidote to and an alternative to being so locked into survival mind all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really the main use of it. But also the connection that the two of you experienced, and that was visible from where I was as an observer, and to any of our viewers as well, is that you lost some of the sense of orientation to the weighty limitations of the real world to escape into the adventure of doing something that was out of that routine, out of those contexts that pull us back down into that vortex, you know, and we need something to offset it. You know, it doesn't mean that the real world has gone away or that our problems have ceased. It just means it gives us a different resource, a place to recharge and renew ourselves from a place of not always caring, not always having to be mindful and worried and all the rest of it.
I feel like then the last exercise was, and kind of hearing you now, really, it's like a recess for the mind. It's like a recess from reality for a little bit. And it's really energizing. It's
good.
Really, it's interesting because I feel both calm and energized at the same time.
Yes. Well, in which case, I think that you're expressing some of the benefits of engaging in this kind of playfulness, right?
Yeah.
No, I was thinking about, you know, Dr. Stuart Brown's statement, the opposite of play is not work, the opposite of play is depression. And I was thinking about adventure mind, you know, and I was thinking adventure mind is basically our protection against, you know, just dropping into this deep despair and depression, you know, of this reality. And moments of the sublime, moments of the play, moments of the imagination, like we need to like moments of like a breath, you know, before we go back into a very harsh reality.
Well, I think what's so important with these games is that they allow you to kind of escape reality a little bit, right? Like find these pockets of play where you're not entrenched in reality while still kind of exercising your mind and creating connection. Because I think so often where people escape to is actually a numbing, right? People escape to a place where they're not necessarily in connection. They're on their phones or they're, you know, or alcohol or you know, just things where they numb and escape and disconnect. With here, it's an engaged, connected kind of rest.
That's right. And you're making an excellent point, which is that frequently people try to get away from the pain and the pulling down into all the worry and despair by simply numbing, tuning out, you know, going getting drunk or whatever it is that takes you away from that. And also that tends to promote disconnection between people.
Right.
And that leaves you more alone and more vulnerable in a way, whereas these games are designed to help you to experience an uplift from the connection and from the intensity of doing something playful and connecting rather than just parallel play, as it were.
Yeah.
I'm also thinking about for a lot of couples, they'll go out, each one will go out to their class or a club or exercise, and you're actually saying do this together with your partner. You get adventure play and you get to connect, because what we're realizing, your biggest resource is your relationship right now, right?
That's right.
That's right.
And one reason that relationships get stuck is because people are afraid of either pulling down their partner. You know, I'm in a distressed or stressful right. place, and I don't want to pull my partner down into the negativity, or they're incapable of keeping themselves regulated well enough, and they know that that's only going to lead to irritation or fighting or further disconnection because of disappointment. And so they tend to stay away from each other, and that only perpetuates or even worsens the problem. So playfully connecting is a way of doing something that both encourages getting out of that negative space, but also of finding positivity in the interplay between the two of you.
Because I'm also thinking
that together.
Because I'm also realizing that survival mind is, I'm only thinking about myself. I'm not relational in that space.
Right.
Yes. I mean, I'm just taking care of me. Like, I need to protect myself. And venture mind's like, venture, to open it, open back. And I'm thinking like it's an active choice, you know? I've done your work before, you know, previous years, and I'm really feeling like it's harder for me to make, it's really more of an effort to step into adventure mind right now in my reality.
That's right.
It's really a practice. I mean, there's no two ways around it. It's choice.
I feel so much better now. Yeah, I just, you really made me realize how much I haven't been playing and how much I really need it. It's really an oxygen mask for me.
Excellent. I'm really gratified to know that that's working for you and that that's being helpful. That's great.
Yeah.
Do we want to take a little time to open it to the to any of the questions or comments?
Yeah, sure. And I'd love to hear your thoughts, questions, challenges.
I see Leia wrote, it's right brain to right brain.
Yeah, if anyone's listening now or watching, please, you can either write in the chats or lift your hand or open a camera.
Yeah, my comment, it's right brain to right brain. Wait, it's opening up. I was referring to when Galit had mentioned that the nonverbal, the movement exercise was somehow connecting in a different way, a deeper way. Dr. Wiener also commented on that. So my comment was, because it's right brain to right brain, because it's nonverbal, it does put us in a different mode of connection.
Yes. Also, you'll notice we did two nonverbal and two verbal exercises. And the verbal doesn't necessarily keep you from accessing your, what you're metaphorically referring to as your right brain. But you have to be in an unusual circumstance or context in order to keep from going into the familiar pathways. And because we're very practiced in being verbal in ways that are, you know, take us back into those habits, it's helpful to do fantasy or, you know, imaginary stuff rather than realistic stuff. You know, if I gave the two of you some kind of realistic problem to solve, you know, that would be all very much left brain or survival line thinking. And there might be some value or satisfaction in it, but it wouldn't take you into the joy and escape, which we're looking for from these kind of exercises.
Well, it's interesting, Lau, as you were speaking, I was realizing there's another word that's coming up for me is adventure mind requires vulnerability, because I need to open myself up and be spontaneous and open. And even in my body, I need to really open up for an adventure.
Yes.
And I think it's a really interesting take that they go, you know, adventure mind is being vulnerable. Play is an act of vulnerability.
Just the adventure mind is already helpful. Because it's like, you know,
adventure.
What will happen? You know, especially now, I particularly have been feeling a lot of despair. So that kind of what will happen is so weighted, right? But what will happen in adventure mind is like, oh, what will happen? You know, it's like, oh, no. Even that kind of lifts the weight.
That's the fortunately side of adventure mind, because you can use your imagination to do catastrophic thinking. Also, think of all the bad things that might happen, or you can rehearse your problems to the point where you really feel like there's no hope or there's no way out, and that obviously is not going to help you. So, what you really want to use is adventure mind as a lever to get you out of the more negatively focused problem solving stuff, which still has to be there on one level, but doesn't have to dominate your consciousness all the time.
Yeah.
You know, something came up for me when you were saying it, I was really realizing that it's been so long since I've seen life as an adventure. You know, I feel like it's been really hard to be like, what's going to happen now? Like, what's going to happen tomorrow? And I feel like,
what will tomorrow bring?
And I feel when you were doing that, I was like, I miss feeling that, you know, it's these moments of adventure, okay? But I'm thinking on the meta level, it's like, I need to believe that life is an adventure and there's going to be some fortune leaves coming. I need that, because it's hard to be hit by fortune leaves every day, you know? I don't know why I'm crying, but I think it's like there's deep yearning for that.
Sure. Absolutely, yeah. And we can help each other to the extent that we can let other people in. We can be of help to one another by offering that gently, not in a, you know, in a demanding kind of way, but by simply offering it and saying, would you like to try this? You know, could we possibly see what would happen if we tried this? You know, without any pressure, without any, you know, you've got to live up to my expectations kind of thing, just to see what would happen. And by the way, there's no right or wrong answers. There are no prizes awarded for good performance here in these games. It's really an activity that's for its own sake. That's what makes it adventure mind. You know, it doesn't have to have the trappings that we usually attach to any kind of purposeful activity, which again tends to be contaminated, I'll call it, by survival mind thinking. So in that way, we give ourselves permission not to succeed or to have to do it right or to be clever or to do it memorably or to worry about whether our partner thinks less of us because we didn't do it the way that they wanted or expected. All that other stuff can be put aside. You know, we're just experiencing the connection in the moment and the discovery of what comes out of us without it being so thought through, premeditated, calculated, and all the rest of it. You know, just find yourself in the moment doing it. You know, and I noticed the two of you got into some real laughter and play in a couple of those exercises, which is really, that's the payoff right there. I mean, you don't have to get anything else out of it.
Yeah, I think it's just hitting me, Daniel, that, you know, we've been talking about play for so many years, and I think right now realizing that play now is connected to hope.
Yeah.
To hope that, you know, and that there will be a fortune coming up. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, it's interesting. Like, I'm opening myself up to adventure and playing. The sadness is coming out. But there's also like a big need for, I need an injection of hope. I need an injection of adventure.
And that's beautiful.
And I'm thinking about you coming, you know, going from the other side of the world. We try to bring play and hope.
Yes.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. This also feels really good. It feels good to play.
It feels alive. It
feels alive.
It feels alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Often we deaden ourselves to avoid pain. You know, we're shrinking.
Yeah.
Expect that the world will only give us more pain if we stay connected to it. And our circle sometimes becomes very constricted, you know, who we let in, who we trust enough, who we feel safe enough and non-judgmental enough to let into our circle. You know, if you're feeling relatively confident and in good balance, you can do this with strangers. But if you're doing it with an intimate partner, who you feel a connection to, a history with, and a trust for, it's that much easier to get to a place where you can explore what it's like to find yourself getting the stirrings of your own hope and your own connection reactivated, as it were.
Yeah. I think also, you know, there's the tension. You can't explore without safety. You now need safety, with the tension between safety and exploration. And I think really the importance of framing it and like, now it's safe right now to let go of reality.
Right.
And step into this play space and really choose hope, choose to go beyond. It's really telling your body you're safe right now. You can play an imaginary tug of rope. It's okay. It's okay. And I think really giving yourself permission.
The safety has to really precede your being willing to go on an adventure at all. You know, there has to be enough trust and enough safety for people to go there. So when they're actively traumatized, it's simply that something that they're not accessible, play is not accessible to them. So play is a little bit delicate, and it can be, opportunities can be found to move toward it, but it all depends upon trust and upon safety. So there has to be some of that in place before that. So go to somebody who you care about, but also who you trust, and see if you can open up to starting to play when you feel the embrace of that connection to the person that you're close to.
It's almost like I'm thinking, if we're going to play at play space and adventure, is also vulnerabilities. How do we help couples stay vulnerable and not completely clamber up and close down? And one of the ways could be going into a play space, right? You can go into an erotic space, into a touch space, into an intimate space, and a play space is a different type of vulnerability.
So it's reciprocal. You both have to be safe enough and trusting enough to start to really play and connect, but you also have to have enough capacity to connect to really bring out the opportunity with someone else to do the play, to engage in the play. So both have to bring each other along, as it were. And the therapist, by the way, the therapist has to be trustworthy and also has to be centered enough to be a person who is not going to appear to be judgmental, is not going to make demands, is going to be inviting, and at the same time, not to be too clinical or, you know, you're not using this for purposes overtly of doing diagnosis or assessment. This is really something that is all about connection. So my sessions, when I do them with clients, I put that at the center of it, really. It's that I have to be in a non-judgmental place myself. I have to be receptive. I have to be tolerant. And I have to be willing to accept whatever they give me. Sometimes it's a surprise. Sometimes people take my instructions and go off in some direction that I didn't expect altogether. Instead of saying, oh, they did that wrong, or didn't I give the instructions to you to do it differently? No, that doesn't matter. What really matters is they were willing to try something. They opened up to an adventure and they had something else happen and it wasn't what I expected, but who cares, you know?
I was also thinking, and if anybody has any more questions now this time, because we're starting to wrap up, but I was really thinking about also for those couples that are watching that are saying, we're not playful or we don't do those type of things. It's obviously a muscle. It's a practice in the muscles. It's almost like a spiritual practice because it's a relational practice.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And it's in the cases, right? Like maybe you hadn't been up until now, but that doesn't mean that you can't start trying, that you can't pick up that rope and start playing ton of rope.
Yeah.
It's a
sometimes. Sometimes for couples that have children, children are the best resource because they're much closer to adventure mind than we as adults are.
Yeah.
They're able to go into it. Even, you know, they could be crying bitterly about something at one moment in time. And then an amazingly short amount of time later, they're off on something else. And now they're laughing or now they're getting really absorbed. They're curious or they're playful or something else. You know, they don't take so long to undo the toxic effects of being worried or being scared or whatever else. They snap back quickly.
So let's, as we're starting to kind of start wrapping things up, and let's do a quick round, each one of us. Like, what's one thing you're taking from today, Galit?
I can't thank you enough, really. I believe in play and I love play and I really feel like I lost play. And thank you for reminding me in my body how it feels to play and how vital it is. I feel like I, you know, like I've had a transfusion of play and life and energy and hope and like all these things that I haven't been in touch with and connection. So wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, I simply was the occasion to catalyze your reconnection to your own playfulness. That's really all I can do is offer something that just gets you started or reminds you.
And I wanted to, do you want to say something, Daniel, before I share?
I think not. I think that pretty much, that could be a wrap right there. But of course, if there's more time and anybody else would like to add any comments or questions.
Well, I wanted to say something and then there's a question. So I think I'm broadcasting live now. I've been standing on your shoulders for years and your groundbreaking work on play. And I think today meeting you and doing these exercises with you in this reality that I've been living in has kind of shed light on once again how vital play is. I didn't grow up in a playful home. I grew up in a volatile depression. So for me, play was, I'm self-taught. It was a top-down process, right? Obviously also following your book, right? And I'm thinking today, like, I'm almost like a more spiritual level. It's not just relational. It's like, it's really giving hope and being vulnerable and choosing to feel and not numb up. Because my defenses have been to numb up since the war started. I'm dissociated a lot, you know, just numbing myself. And I think play is really being a highway toward feeling, toward hope, toward vulnerability, toward vitality, toward adventure. I can't thank you enough.
Most welcome.
And I really appreciate you introducing play and improvisation decades before anyone was speaking about it, really being a pioneer in that field. And that leads me to Mordechai's comment. This is wonderful. Where can we get more games? Where can people learn with you? Also, Lau, how can people follow you, learn with you, play with you, train with you, please?
Well, I offer trainings online on Zoom in English to people who want to learn my approach. Most of what I do at this point are not workshops for lay people, but are trainings for therapists. But the beginnings of the training really involve a lot of personal experiences, just as both of you have had during the short time that we've been involved together here. So these trainings are available. They're on my website, which is rehearsalsforgrowth.com. And you can follow the links there. There's also a great deal of information, as well as some clips of video that show some of these games and exercise. The book, Rehearsals for Growth. There's a lot of interconnections between different aspects, my writings and my workshops and so forth. I'll also mention that I've been involved now for starting the third year of doing these workshops in China. I've been teaching in China for the last 2 years, and that's expanding. It's now going very well, and probably in another year of additional training, we'll have some people who are Chinese teachers who will also be taking this over. Not of direct importance at the moment to you, but just throwing that in because it's getting a little bit international here.
Wow.
Great.
There was a question. Can you ask Daniel if there's a way for a couple to wrap up the play together? Are there questions that they could ask each other or something like that?
I didn't understand whether the question was directed toward asking for a resource or affirmation of the principle there. Can you repeat the question?
Is there a way for a couple to wrap up the play together? Are there questions that they could ask each other or something like that?
Yes and no. I think that too much processing and analyzing gets us back into survival mind thinking, because then we want to learn from our supposed mistakes, do it better, or have do something to plan for a more successful future experience. And the danger of that is that, again, that kind of purposeful striving gets in the way of just experiencing the moment. It's the moment is something which is a little bit delicate. It doesn't really stick around for being put under the microscope too well, you know? So my preference is to move on and just to play more and to do less thinking and less analyzing. Now,
play more, want, think less.
Play
yeah.
less. Play more, analyze
play more, think less. I like that. That's a good slogan, right? I would say for people who want to learn this approach, you have to kind of do both, because in order to impart, to use this as a therapeutic method, you also need to be doing some thinking. You need to have some basis in planning and experience yourself. The analogy I use sometimes is a little bit like being the adult in the playground. You know, you can't be on the swings or in the sandbox with the kids all the time. You have to be watching out to make sure that people are safe and that things are going in a way that's more less chaotic and so forth. So you have to be of both minds. You have to be a little bit more in survival mind when you're the therapist. You can let loose and have fun when you're being the client, and you have to be the container or the one holding the space as a safe space for the clients when you're the therapist. So.
All right. So we want to thank you. We're here. Anybody new?
And I want to thank you because you've been a beautiful couple that have really been very receptive and open, and personally warm and sharing of yourselves when you went through the exercises I invited you to try. So that was beautiful. I thoroughly enjoyed that, and I hope to get to know both of you even better.
Thank you so much. And
thank
everybody for joining us and
for watching the recording.
For watching the recording.
I'll wait here if anybody wants to play with us here as well.
Yeah. And we're going to continue playing all these games.
Exactly. But
we're going to tell many stories.
So thank you, everyone. Take care. We will see you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.